Welcome to In Season, exploring farming and gardening in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff. As a farmer, I'm always aware that the actions we take on our farm, digging and tilling the soil, irrigating crops, making compost, they all have consequences beyond just the production and harvest of the crops. What we do to our soil and how we use the water available to us can have long-term impacts on the health of the ecosystem we live and farm in. For farmers and ranchers, how to do your job and maintain healthy waterways, prevent soil erosion, get rid of invasive weeds, these can all present many questions. Fortunately, there are people like Austin Tomlinson, Clatsop County's Soil and Water Conservation Technician, who can help us to find the answers. Austin came out to our farm recently and talked with me about the work he does to help keep Clatsop County's water and soil healthy for us all. Today we are talking with Austin Tomlinson, and he is the Clatsop County Soil and Water Conservation District Technician. We're both laughing. That is one of the longest job titles I think I found. Welcome, Austin.
Yeah, thanks, Teresa. Thanks for having me.
And it's interesting because this is kind of what you do, but I'm going to describe people. We're sitting here on my farm in Olney, and we're looking out at our fields. And so I just want to warn you, there may be a bit of traffic noise from Highway 202, and the occasional rooster may have something to say throughout our conversation. But this is kind of what Austin does. He comes out and visits people's property and talks to them about various things that they can do on their land and helps them make that happen. So we're going to get into that a little bit later, but I just want Austin to introduce himself and tell us a bit about himself. You have some deep connections here to the North Coast, don't you?
Yeah. Actually, I was born and raised here in Clatsop County. I grew up in Seaside. I went to Seaside High School. But I ended up always wanting to come back. You know, you get to go away to go.
Yeah, you do.
to get anything, accomplish anything as far as education-wise or to see the world. So I went away to college. I went to Humboldt State University in Northern California and got my degree in soil science there and also a minor in watershed management. So, and I came back to the coast as soon as I could. Junior year of college, I met you. At the land trust.
Yeah, when I was working for North Coast Land Conservancy, and Austin came on as a land steward.
Yeah, I was just basically an intern, really at that time. Yeah, and then everything fell into place after that. And
I remember having some great conversations with you about soil because I, you know, as a farmer, I'm so excited about soil, and we were just geeking out about soil and soil profiles and types and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, soils is it's a passion of mine, I guess, but it's super interesting. Just there's so many different dynamics to it, and I mean, there's like I have a degree in it. There's a whole study of it that you can go beyond, even up to your PhD, and it involves everything from chemistry to biology and then also physics. So it's a whole combination of everything.
I think what I love about soil too is that, I mean, there's so much that we still don't understand about soil and the microorganisms that live in it and things. I mean, we understand a lot about how it works, but there's also a lot about like, whoa, I never knew that. And it's amazing.
Yeah, no, every time I hear new data or new talks or repapers about soils, it's something's new coming up out of it every day. There's still the organisms, the microorganisms, the life in soil is just beyond what we can even fathom. There's over a million organisms in less than a cubic meter of soil. So it's like, it's insane. Like there's a whole life underneath us, a whole other world that we don't even really understand or see. So,
and it's so much of what informs like how things grow.
Yeah.
And what works and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, soil health, I mean, certainly I understand this as a, you know, someone who grows plants. That this is the basis of everything. Mm-hmm. Your soil, how healthy your soil is, I think informs how healthy your plants are. But also for people who raise animals, how healthy is your pasture and, you know, what the animals are eating. So, and this kind of translates into the work that you're doing now. So mm-hmm. I don't think I really understand what it is that you do. So I want you to explain what the Soil and Water Conservation District is and then what the work you do is.
Yeah, a lot of people ask that question. it's, you know, like the name is really long, Clatsop Soil and Water Conservation District, and there's
So definitely I'll, need a more snappy title.
Yeah, I know. And so Soil and Water is, you know, super broad. And so just to break it down, the district is my bosses basically are directors by the board of directors, and they are voted on by the Clatsop County voters. So the county is broken up into different zones. Uh-huh. And I think there's five zones. So we have five directors, one from each zone, and they make up our board of directors. There's also at-large directors, and our chair, Mike Sepp, is also an at-large director. But basically, back in the Dust Bowl days, the United States government basically required each state to basically create these districts, soil and water conservation districts.
Because this was at a time when there was massive soil erosion in the Midwest, especially,
and we were seeing
concern about resources.
Yeah, we were losing all of our topsoil throughout the nation, especially, well, mostly in the Midwest. And, you know, as everybody has seen in history classes, the pictures of the Dust Bowls and taking over Oklahoma and all that area. So so basically it was a measure just to, you know, help farmers deal with some of the land use issues they were dealing with, and to make sure everybody was doing what they were supposed to and in relation to the natural resources and also the water water quality.
So encouraging farmers to not do things that would lead to soil erosion or to pollution, water quality pollution.
That was the basis of it. Now it's more or less focused on water quality because we don't have a lot of
soil erosion
issues. There's not like a lot of people just tilling up the land and just going for it anymore, you know. And especially in Clatsop County, we have a lot of diking areas with mostly dairy and beef cattle and even sheep. So, and we've seen a lot of that actually disappear over time just because of the way the market works and stuff. But anyways, so the district basically was originally set up that way. And then we were actually one of the first districts in the state of Oregon to be active. We were one of the first ones to actually get up and rolling. And there was actually three different districts in the county at the time. There was a Clatsop Plains district, and there was also the Dune district, which is in Warrenton, and then there was like an Astoria district, and then there was an Aconicum district, and then they all combined together. I think it was in the 60s
to make one big district
within the county.
So the whole district thing and the history of this, it seems confusing. And
yeah,
I mean, it confuses me. It must confuse you to some degree too.
Yeah. So basically we're a non-regulatory agency. So we're here for the landowners of Clatsop County. So
as a resource, for information,
informational resource, an economical resource, for, you know, anywhere from helping you with cross fencing, manure storage facilities, water catchment systems.
So you have some funding that can help build these things on people's farms to some degree, or
we can get the funding. We're eligible for grants, just like a lot of the watershed councils are in the area. So and it's kind of funny because the watershed councils in the district are also competing for the same money. And we also work a lot with the watershed councils, so it's kind of a fine line between salmon habitat restoration and then farm farm use, farm health, and water quality.
It's always been a tricky thing to straddle,
yeah.
You know. And it's interesting because I've worked so much in land conservation, and I used to be chair of the Nincanicum Watershed Council years ago, and you know, the sort of salmon habitat, yeah, natural resources is close to my heart. But then I also have, you know, this foot in the farming world and see the benefits that can bring,
yeah,
to our community as well. And so being able to strike that balance between the two is challenging, but I think possible.
Yeah, and the basis of any funding that I'll go for, it has to be focused on that water quality aspect of it.
Okay.
So, and especially with OWEB grants, which are the same.
Okay, OWEB?
Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board.
It's acronyms.
which is the major funding body for the watershed councils and also us as a district. Mm-hmm. Those are the grants I would be applying for. I'm also eligible to apply for other grants, foundation grants and all that other stuff.
Okay.
So,
So with water, you focus on water quality. So what are things that degrade water quality? I mean, that you would then try to help alleviate.
Yeah. So specifically, nutrient inputs. So basically sediments or nutrients coming from off of agricultural producers. So most like manure or even high levels of applications of
fertilizer,
herbicide and pesticides.
So these are all things that can run off of your pasture mm-hmm. when because we have a lot of heavy rainfall.
Of course.
The heavy rainfall washes excess manure, fertilizers, things like that. They wash them into our creeks and streams and sloughs.
Yeah, and they can have adverse effects on basically the chemistry of the water mm-hmm. and causing not only an increase in nitrogen loading, so mm-hmm. would you actually get microscopic or algae-forming plants mm-hmm. that can grow, and they can
actually... So people talk about algae blooms?
Yeah, they can actually pull oxygen out of the water, which overall affects fish and all the other invertebrate life. So that's one issue. Temperature. So, we have a lot of temperature issues in the area because, we have over generations and uses of the land, we've basically cut down a lot of our riparian trees and shrubs, stuff that kept the water cool during the low water months, so during the summertime.
So when water temperatures rise, that's not, fish don't like that.
Fish don't like that.
Nobody fish like really, shade. I yeah, know. Fish we all like shade.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody really likes to be too hot. So, and fish don't like it either. And, so that's another issue. So basically putting up riparian plants along a stream bank is really a good form of water quality prevention measures, because you're not only addressing the temperature issues, but also addressing some of the erosion issues. So I talked about sediments being another water quality issue.
Because you can get that when animals are going down to a creek to drink, their hooves, they create a lot of mud and runoff, and that can wash into the creeks.
Yeah, all that. And then also, if you have a lack of vegetation along a stream bank, you have a high ability of it eroding during some
like
high water.
Undercutting. So the roots of the riparian plants are partly what's holding it together. And riparian plants are beautiful. I mean, if people don't know what the word riparian means, I don't know that I can define it per se, but it's like the plants that grow along a creek or a stream.
It's basically just the...
shrubby plants.
The land around a stream.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are some of my most favorite plants, things like twinberry and mm-hmm. Nootka rose and salmonberry and thimbleberry and,
Ninebark.
Oh, ninebark is so beautiful. Yeah. I mean, they're gorgeous plants.
Snowberry.
Yeah, and the cool thing about them, too, is that they create this really beautiful thicket, great habitat for birds mm-hmm. as well, songbirds, migratory birds, all the berries and things they love to eat. It also provides places for them to shelter, and so that really helps the bird population, which, from my point of view, the birds eat a lot of the insects that, eat the plants that I'm trying to grow and take to market. So it's a great...
And also pollinators.
And pollinators, very important. Yeah. So, it provides habitat for native pollinators and food for native pollinators. So it's a really great thing to have.
Yeah, it's a holistic approach of providing good things for wildlife. So it's not only, fish-centric for riparian planting, it's creating all these water quality issues, but... also for the entire wildlife of Dallas. So
I know it just improves the whole ecosystem. And what I like about it is that it takes this balanced approach. You're doing things that benefit fish habitats, and that's great because fishing is really important to our mm-hmm. region. But it's protecting, ranchers who want to be able to, raise animals on their land and not feel like they're, impacting fish. And then you're providing habitat for pollinators, which is great for people who raise crops and fruit and vegetables. And
one of the things is this is all voluntary. I'm not a regulatory person in the sense I'm not saying, you have to put these plants along these stream. I'm basically saying that it's a benefit to both you as a landowner and a producer, as well as to the ecology and the fish of the region. So, if you feel like if you want to take that step, that's something that we're here for. Also, if anybody ever got into a compliance issue with ODA, mm-hmm. ODA would firstly call us, and we would be the landowner, the farmer's representative.
Oh, okay.
So if somebody got in trouble for having a big pile of manure right next to their stream, and it was just running off directly right in that stream, did the ODA did a water quality test, and you had this high levels of E. coli or whatever, and they'd call us first to be like, hey, we have a producer in your county, and he's out of compliance with the Agricultural Water Quality Act. And he's like, we want you to come down and meet with the landowner and us. And I'd be like, okay, I'll be down there. And I would be basically the go-to person between ODA and the landowner. So if
so you're the resource for the landowner.
I'm the resource for the landowner. So if they were out of compliance, then I would help them not be in compliance anymore. So
to be
out of compliance. Sorry.
You help them get back into compliance.
Back into compliance, yes.
We're going to take a break now to remind you that you're listening to Coast Community Radio on KMUN 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, and we're streaming live at coastradio.org. If you're just joining us for In Season, this week we're talking with Clatsop County Soil and Water Conservation District Technician Austin Tomlinson.
Some of this stuff seems obvious, but isn't always obvious, and I think, you know, I've certainly seen this with a lot of people who either have been producing a certain way for a long time and just, you know, maybe, you know, this is the way that their family's always done it and, you know, they don't know that rules have changed. Or you have a lot of new people entering agriculture who do not come from agricultural backgrounds like myself, mm-hmm. and who may not understand that some of the things that they're doing might have unintended consequences.
Yeah. And sometimes we'll get people that just, are wondering, am I doing this right?
Yeah.
And, If I don't know the answer, I'll find the answer for you. That's the great thing about the district. We're actually just there as an information resource. So it doesn't matter really what the issue is. I mean, I've had the most random phone calls from people trying to, wanting to put up a butcher shop.
Yeah.
You know, like, are they
in compliance?
In compliance. Like, or
is that something that you would have any?
No, but I would. I gave
but people ask you.
People ask me, and I just be like, refer them to. I'd look it up online and find the person that they'd have to talk to. And I'd talk to that person and be like, hey, I have a person here in the county who wants to set up a butcher shop. Like, what do they do? And they're like, I'll have them talk to me, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
So I'll just pass on that information in order for them to proceed with what they want to do.
So I just on that note, I mean, I'll ask you this again towards the end, but just so if people do want to get in touch with you, if they have questions, they want to know more about this, how do people reach you? Is it email? Is it phone?
Either one. Phone calls, email. Just go to the website, clatsopswcd.org, and you'll see all of our information there.
Okay. clatsopswcd.
Yeah.
.org. Okay.
Yeah. Or 503-325-1470.
Okay. I know it's hard when you don't call yourself. It's really hard to know your phone number. But for example, so the pile of manure stored next to the creek, clearly not a good idea. It's running off. That can be all bad. What is a good way to store manure? If you keep horses, if you have llamas, if you have, you know, sheep or goats or a lot of chickens, what's a good way to store your manure?
Manure, a covered facility would be the best way, and obviously away, far away as you can from a water body or some type of stream. So, that's one of the things we provide. If you have a real issue with that, we can actually help provide financial resources to build a facility. Or,
so you're talking about like a covered, like with a concrete floor,
pad. Ideally, you'd have like a concrete pad, and then. And you'd also design it to meet your needs, really. So if you're producing a certain amount of manure over time, when we can help you calculate that. But based on that, we'd want to do maybe a composting system. So it's like a 2-bay or 3-bay system where you're actually able to turn it over a certain amount of time. And then you actually have a nice compost that you can just spread throughout your pasture or use in your garden, whatever you saw fit.
So when it reaches a certain point, so the manure has to have composted down to something that is more benign insofar as like not having E. coli or other.
Well, it's more or less a breakdown in the organic matters that really releases all those nutrients, all those bacteria. The bacteria will, if you heat it up enough, it will die off, mm-hmm. you know, like the E. coli and stuff. So, and that's basically the goal, is to reach a point where you have this real nutrient-rich organic material that doesn't have those real adverse bacteria that can affect water bodies and then okay. also yourself and then your animals. So,
and do you provide people information about, like, how to, if they set up a manure composting facility, can you give them guidance on, and yeah. here's how you do it? Because that's not something yeah. that people, it's not necessarily obvious if you've never made yeah. compost before.
No, it is a complicated process, but I mean, it's simple in design though.
Yeah.
Which is nice, because you can have a certain amount of material and you can actually do it wrong. You know, you can either have too much of something or not yeah. enough of another thing, and you actually have an unbalanced compost that is not so much good for your garden or your pasture, but you know, you can make a good product if you do it right. So yeah. But I have all the resources available. We have pamphlets and guides in which to do it and help you design a manure storage facility, or even just give you some numbers based on like what you're producing and what you can expect to get mm-hmm. out of it. So,
and so you also do a lot of fencing. So this is like helping farmers and ranchers fence along riparian areas to keep their animals out of
yeah.
creeks and streams.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, is to put a riparian, another word, riparian fencing. So ideally, we'd like to put a fence with like some type of buffer away from the stream that keeps the animals enough distance away that any manure they are producing within that pasture isn't going straight into has at least enough distance to mm-hmm. to filter through the soil and the plants. And so
I have a question for you, because I know I have some neighbors out here, and yeah. so for a lot of them, it's like that's how their animals drink water, is they go mm-hmm. down to the creek and they just drink, and they stand there and they drink. You can't control the animal like pooping at the same time,
yeah,
which is part of the issue that you've got. So if they fence the animals off from the creek or the stream, how then do the animals get water? Help with that too?
I can. Yeah. There's all different kinds of methods. There's heavy use area paddocks we can build, like that basically help stabilize the stream or like whatever water source it is, and allows that from being either eroded or an area that you can actually pick up the manure or remove it away from the mm-hmm. from the stream area. Also, there's off channel watering facilities, basically nozzles that you can use that would actually pump water into an off,
like a trough or something,
like a trough away from the water body. There's a whole kinds of different systems, and each one is designed to meet the producer's needs and also the land use needs. So,
so you can adapt it to the specific location, because that's got to be challenging. Some
oh for sure, yeah.
Situations must be pretty,
and
tricky.
it can be financially a burden as well. So it's you got to really pick what works best for the producer and also best for the stream too. So
so it's very site specific.
It's very site specific. And a lot of everything really is, you know, like that's why me coming out to a farm like yours and just actually seeing what's going on and then just talking about it and seeing what you need and what we'd like to see. But it's basically mm-hmm. it's all voluntary, so it's yeah. pretty much up to you as how you want to go about it. So
well, and you know, I will say, like, you know, Packy and I have talked to Austin in the past, and we'll continue to talk. We've been looking at some water catchment systems mm-hmm. on the farm and trying to understand what might work best for us, and that's another thing that you can provide resources about, is water catchment.
Yeah, and then it also comes down to regulatory issues. Like, I mean, when we're talking about your catchment system, we're talking about a whole range of different agencies that would be involved.
You know, and it's so I have to say, this is so fascinating, because water rights are different depending on the state.
Yeah.
And each state regulates water differently and water catchment differently. Like, for some states, I think, water, you can just catch water, whatever, pull it out of a creek or stream.
Yeah.
But most states regulate it, and you have to have rights. Like, and I know with Oregon, it's once it touches the ground.
Yeah, it becomes part of the state.
The state owns yeah. it. So if you catch it before it touches the ground, you can use it.
Yeah, that's true.
But there's gray area if you're using it for agriculture.
There's a lot of gray area. especially with wetlands and water and that whole range of issues, just because of just changes in policy over time. And it really seems yeah. like It's getting more strict. So. Yeah.
Well, and that's where I see the value of the work that you do, even though the name of your agency is ridiculously long and should absolutely be shortened, or you need a snappy acronym. But what you do as a landowner and as a farmer, I see is like you are that kind of interpreter in some ways. Like there's all this complicated stuff out there and all these resources out there, and you can help us understand what we need to do to be in compliance so we don't get in trouble.
Yeah.
And then what some of the resources are out there that we can access to do what we're doing better. And, you know, having somebody in your corner that can advocate for you and help you understand those things, because it's complicated stuff.
Oh,
all
for
of those,
sure.
It's just, I don't understand how you understand it.
sometimes I don't. I mean, it's.
But you at least know where to start looking.
No, I know how to look and find the answers for the person. And that's kind of fun. That's what I kind of enjoy is weeding through all the stuff that I have to get to that final answer, which is I learn a lot along the way, and which is really cool. But also before we even ended, I want to talk about the we also deal with the weeds in the county,
invasive species.
We get grants through again OEB and then Oregon Department of Agriculture to address specific noxious weeds throughout the county, and this year we're treating yellow flag iris.
Oh, I hate that stuff.
Which is insanely rampant throughout the entire Young's Bay and Browns Mead area. And then all the species of knotweed, Japanese Himalayan and giant knotweed, gorse, which is mostly found up in Fort Stevens, actually comes over from Washington.
Thank you, Washington. Keep your gorse.
and then also a purple loosestrife, of course. But we've got a handle on that pretty much. But then also,
do you really?
At least in Young's Bay.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's still in the Columbia system, but
yeah. That's not bad.
We've done a pretty good job about it. And then also we have a new species, mat grass, which isn't found on North Coast Land Conservancy property out in Clatsop Plains. And we're going to be doing a huge survey throughout Clatsop Plains to see if other landowners and also the land trust properties have it. So if
a landowner has like serious invasive species on their property, should they call you too?
Yeah, yeah.
And say, what do I do about this?
Yeah, just give us a call and then, we have a permission to access your land form and allows us to come on the land and
so you can help treat things like knotweed and
yeah.
You can help people
to hopefully a degree. We have it's a limited funding source, but and we have one guy for the entire county, our weed specialist Lee Wander, so it's tough for him to reach all those corners of the county and
but he's trying.
He's trying. Yeah. And I give him credit for that. But
yeah.
Yeah, so that's just another aspect of what we do is treat weeds and also are a educational resource for the community on that.
Well, I really encourage people, if you have questions or concerns about water quality, your manure, your weeds, whatever, to contact Austin. He's an awesome guy. I love working with him. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of In Season. Many thanks to our guest, Austin Tomlinson, Clatsop County's Soil and Water Conservation District Technician. If you have questions for Austin, you can reach him at 503-325-4571, or you can visit their website at clatsopswcd.org. I'm really happy to welcome back in-season sound engineer Katie Claiborne. It is so good to have her back in the editing seat. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and look forward to talking with you next time.